Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The technology sector is the fastest growing industry in the United States. The Department of Labor predicts that the U.S. will add more than 1 million new computer science jobs by 2022. But there's a problem. We're graduating proportionately fewer computer science majors today than we did in the 1980s, and the number of students signing up for computer science has flatlined. Computer science is the only one of the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, that has seen a decrease in student participation over the last 20 years. That's according to a study by the National Center for Education Statistics. AP computer science classes are only available to 10% of American high schools, and because it's considered an elective, only a fraction of students take the course. But organizations and schools across the country are working to really change this and to specifically make coding accessible to everyone and to make it accessible in underserved communities. So how will technology change once it diversifies, and is the ability to code the new literacy? Today we are joined by Annette V, assistant professor in the English department at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches courses in literacy, composition, and technology. And she says the ability to code is about a lot more than just getting a job. Hi, Annette. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And we're also joined by Jim Ryan. Jim is STEM's Executive Director of the San Francisco Unified School District. The school district just partnered with Mission Brit, a local nonprofit that offers free coding classes to integrate computer science classes as a basic part of the curriculum. And Jim joins me here in studio. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. I didn't even know that your position exists in the school district in San Francisco. You're STEM Executive Director.
It's existed for 14 months now.
So brand new.
Yes.
Who decided to come up with this position, and how did you hear about it?
I was working as a partner to the school district, supporting their math implementation of the Common Core, and the deputy superintendent and the chief academic officer asked me if I was at all interested in applying for this brand new position that they had just created.
And so, what are your job duties? What is your main goal as the a STEM executive director of Unified School District?
I oversee the math team. We have as well as a science instruction team and the educational technology team. And so our role is within each one of those teams. We have the math team is tasked with rolling out the Common Core standards for mathematics. The science team is tasked with rolling out a new set of standards for science as well, the next generation science standards. Mm-hmm. And the educational technology team has the widest tentacles in that they have to infuse all of our instruction with educational technology as it comes online within our schools. Some of the schools are still just ramping up. Some are pushing forward. And so they are thinking about how do we use computers or technology to accelerate learning within English, within math, within science, within social science, within PE, but as well as how do we bring computer science into the curricula, as you said, it's currently not a body of knowledge that every student experiences. And so our aspirational goal is let's change that. Hmm. Let's make computer science a basic skill that all students as they go through San Francisco Unified experience.
At what age does this begin, or what grade does this begin?
Currently, most of our computer science experiences, and they are elective, they aren't for every student at this point, start at middle school. But we recognize that we really want to start exposing kids to the concepts of computer science earlier on in elementary school. and build upon that through middle school and then expand on it in high school by giving students choices. I mean, the beauty of it is that there's a great variety of skill sets that we can bring in, whether it be the AP courses that you mentioned where students are learning Java, or it could be in a art class in which students are learning user interface design and programming in writing scripts in HTML or JavaScript.
That is Jim Ryan. He is STEM Executive Director of the San Francisco Unified School District, and STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. Annette, are we seeing more programs like this across the country? Because when we think about coding, I'm sure a lot of us think about reaching out to college students, but we're really talking about students across the board here.
Sure. I think we are seeing more of that. And I think that, you know, part of it, as you said in your intro, is that there's a kind of anxiety that we're not graduating enough computer science majors in order to fill the jobs that we have. And so a number of high-tech companies are relying on H-1B visas to bring in foreign workers to fill these jobs. I think, I mean, we've been through several different cycles of this before. There was a kind of upsurge in interest in teaching programming in elementary schools in the 1980s as well, and that was much more connected to defense and the Cold War, as there was a kind of thinking that at that time that kids needed to learn how to use these technologies in order to basically beat the Russians. And so there was a lot of money put towards it then. So, you know, this isn't the first time that we've seen it, but I think that it's becoming much more diversified. So it's becoming, as he said, you know, it's going into art classes and other places too, which is exciting to see. And that's, you know, partly there's a development in technology since then, that there's a lot more places that people can use coding. The technology is, you know, you can use mobile devices. It's much cheaper. And there are, I think, we don't have statistics on this, but I think there are more people who are equipped to teach these things because they've had more more access to be able to learn it, to teach it themselves.
And you spent a lot of time writing about this. What does it mean to be computer literate these days?
Well, I think that's as difficult a question as it is to say, you know, what does it mean to be literate? And I think, so to answer the what does it mean to be literate question first, you know, this has been something that has changed throughout history. You know, it's not always been about reading and writing. You know, it used to be just being literate, just being able to read was important. And literacy wasn't important until writing became so important and so infrastructural to everyday life that you really couldn't avoid it. You couldn't participate in everyday communication and everyday information exchange without knowing how to read and write. And that, you know, that hasn't always, of course, been the case throughout history. And so I think for computer literacy, that also is it's a moving target. In the 1980s, computer literacy was a lot about, you know, can you insert a disk in a disk drive? And that, of course, is a, you know, that's a dead art, which is fine. and now I think, you know, it does have a lot more to do with coding, but it does have to do with user interface design and other things, too. I think that the reason why I think literacy is a useful lens into thinking about computer programming, and I would argue a much more useful lens than computer science, is that literacy implies a much more generalized skill. You know, we don't need a bunch of English majors in order to read and write, although, you know, of course I'm an English professor, so I have to promote the English major, but we don't need that in order to read and write. Lots of people can read and write and not have an English degree. And so I think that computer programming has become so important and so useful to so many jobs, you know, journalism and art and government and teaching, that that it's become a much more generalized skill. And so literacy, textual literacy, looks different in every place you learn it. You know, that's why you go to law school and learn how to write legal documents that are different from, you know, where you might go for somewhere else for a different kind of literacy. And so I think defining computer literacy as, you know, it's X, Y, and Z is maybe against the idea of literacy or thinking about it as literacy in the first place.
What would you add to that, Jim? You say that this is about a lot more than just learning how to code. I mean, this also has to do with things like problem solving.
Yeah, the computer science as a body of knowledge in the K through 12 world is really about computational literacy. It's about how do you employ a computer or technology to solve a problem for you. And so that's one of the components that we're trying to grasp as we think about how does this body of knowledge permeate K through 12. How can we get students who have an interest in art, have an interest in social science, as well as those who are predisposed into the science and math areas to take an interest in computer science? And that is how we, and so that is how we have to approach it, so that it is about this general computational literacy. The one piece that we also need to keep track of is that there is this general knowledge of what is computer science, but then there is the computer science that many refer to in the STEM fields that are folks employed in the technology world. And computer science, it doesn't sit in isolation. I mean, one of the things that we have to consider is how are our students doing in their math courses? Because you can't succeed in a coding environment unless you know math. How do you succeed in your science? How do you approach scientific problems? Can you brainstorm and develop hypotheses and test those and fail forward as you need to when you're writing code? So we need to be able to place this within the context of getting more of our students to find success and joy and love in those other STEM fields of mathematics and science.
Annette, you wrote a really good article, Understanding Computer Programming as Literacy, and you write that since the 1960s, computer enthusiasts have employed the concept of literacy to underscore the importance and power of writing for and with computers. And you quoted a couple different computer scientists back then. Alan Perlis said that undergrads should be taught programming just as they're taught writing in first-year composition courses. Others said that computer literacy will be a condition for even survival. So people were saying some of the same things they're saying today back in the 1960s. But it seems like today there's so much obviously more focus on jobs and these, you know, tech startups. But you point out that it's important to emphasize the fact that this is not just about getting a job and coming up with the latest startup that will make you lots of money, which, of course, a lot of people want to do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But you say it's about a lot more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of ideology, that kind of idea was really driving the initial focus in the 1960s for promoting people to code. So if you've ever heard of the BASIC programming language, that was invented in the early 1960s at Dartmouth University, and the objective there was to, and you have to picture, too, computer technology in the 1960s. It was mainframes only, and it was only a handful of places that would have it, big businesses, major universities. And so the idea, this was Thomas Kemeny, John Kemeny and Thomas Kurtz at Dartmouth. They were mathematicians, and they had this vision that they would, you know, make computer programming accessible to all of Dartmouth University freshmen and kind of, you know, ramp it up from there. And it ended up ramping up a lot of different places. But the BASIC programming language is, you know, very accessible. It has a very low bar to get into, and you can do a lot of things right away. And so they wrote this programming language in order to do that. And there was an idea there that, especially at Dartmouth University, they're training the future leaders of the United States, and so it was important for these leaders to learn how to do to operate computers, which at that point necessarily involved computer programming. Leaders would need to know how to do this because computers were becoming so important in the 1960s. They were infrastructural to defense, to government. The census was being calculated through computers by that point. And major industry, you know, airlines were switching over at that point to automated systems. So it was becoming clear to those people who were intimately involved with computers that these were not going away. In fact, they were very important, and they were becoming more and more important. And so you see this kind of movement, transfer a couple different places. So in the 1970s at Xerox PARC, Alan Kay was very visionary, and he had this idea of laptops. You know, having everybody would have their own personal computer. Can you believe it? And people thought he was crazy at the time, of course. He also invented a language that would be small talk, that would be much more sort of integrated with the computer so that people could control it with programming. In the 1980s, it turned into Logo, the Logo programming language, and that came into elementary school classrooms. And that was, you know, as I said earlier, integrated with defense funding. And so, you know, in the 1980s, you see it move to the web, and it does actually become a lot more accessible because you can, you know, now that there's 8 million different tutorials and programs in order to learn computer programming online, you can do it if you know what you're doing, if you know where to go, and these kinds of, there's been different ideas throughout this about why we would need to learn computer programming. Now, I think, at least, on the outside, it looks like, you know, places like code.org are arguing, well, we need it because, you know, look at all these great jobs. But there's also organizations like Black Girls Code that are not, I don't think, operating with that kind of idea. They're thinking much more, I think, you know, visionarily, expansively about what does it mean to have this skill possessed by a wider group of people.
Right.
That you can... You know, you can do so many more things than, you know, not having a job as a computer programmer. I find the computer programming that I know quite useful, and I'm an English professor. I'm never going to get a job as a computer programmer. And so I think that that kind of, you know, again, like a literacy, this sort of generalized skill has been, you know, that's been sort of a an impetus for this movement all along, and it still is, too, although I think the dominant rhetoric right now is about jobs.
That is Annette V. She's assistant professor in the English department at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches courses in literacy, composition, and technology. We're also joined by Jim Ryan. He is STEM Executive Director, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics of the San Francisco Unified School District. This is a fairly new position. The SFUSD just partnered with Mission Bit. That's a local nonprofit that offers free coding classes. And today we are talking about whether coding is the new literacy. What is coding literacy? When we take a look at the fact that we're graduating fewer computer science majors than we did in the 1980s, a lot of people say this is not good news for the United States, but a lot of organizations and schools are stepping up to fill the void and really trying to reach underserved communities. And we'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. So what are your thoughts on this issue? What are your thoughts on computational literacy and teaching these skills, not only in college, but also in middle school? If you work in schools or if you work with technology and kids, we'd love to hear from you. How do you make this relevant to children who maybe they don't have computers at home, for example? I'd love to ask you about that, Jim. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And also, Annette says this is about more than getting a job. People really need this for their lives, problem solving, many other issues. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So what about that, Jim? When you teach these classes in middle school, and you talk to kids about computer science, how do you make it relevant to kids who might not have access to technology at home?
One of the primary barriers that we have to overcome is how do we provide access to the technology for all students who are in those courses, and eventually all students, if we want to get away from just those very few students who happen to choose to take an elective, but actually think of this as a body of knowledge that every student should have. And we have to ramp up as a district in making sure that we have enough devices for students so that they have access to the content. And that's not an inexpensive effort on our part, and it's one that we have to take on, as every district is now taking on. How do we provide the hardware as well as the software? Part of it will be at a certain age, it will be a student's bringing your own device to school and the school supplementing for those students who don't have devices. And just as students now bring notebooks, soon the students will be bringing a device that can help them in their schoolwork this way.
Can you give us any examples of situations involving kids who maybe didn't think that this was relevant to their lives and then took a class and realized that it was something they really wanted to pursue?
We have at various schools. For instance, one of the schools I was talking to, a teacher who had their all students in the course participate in code.org's Hour of Code. It's something that easily done at a school site who then and all students participated, all of their that teacher students participated. There were a subset of those students who found who found it so interesting, they went out and pursued and found other online resources to do this. And so then the teacher built that into their ongoing work, because because students had already done the homework and found the cool resources to help them understand coding in greater depth than they got through the code.org Hour of Code.
And Annette, there are some really great organizations doing work here in Northern California. There's the Summer Math and Science Honors Academy. It's a three-year program for high school students organized by the Oakland-based Level Playing Field Institute. And for 5 weeks each summer, students of color are provided with mentors and college prep classes with the aim of getting them into technology, science, math programs in college. And it seems like there are a lot more groups like this across the country.
Well, that's great news. I didn't know about that group, but there are a number of groups that I think are really genuinely working on issues of representation in this idea. And, you know, again, if you think of it as a literacy, it's incredibly important. And the kinds of things that the kinds of problems that that we can solve when we have a much more diverse group of people working on solving those problems and imagining not just solving problems, but making new things, games, et cetera. I think that, you know, that can only be good.
NBC had an article about these summer programs and pointed out that, for example, there's a huge lack of diversity at tech companies. Apple CEO Tim Cook told Bloomberg about his company planning to release information on diversity, quote, at some point. In June, LinkedIn released data showing that only 2% of its workforce is black. Google's employees, 2% black, 3% Hispanic. They declined to comment on this NBC article. Facebook also didn't respond, and we actually have a caller on this issue. So let's go to Anonymous in Silicon Valley. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. I often listen to your show. It's nice to talk to you, and I'm glad you're talking about this topic.
Thank you.
I'm an engineer. I work sometimes on computer science. I use computer science in my everyday work, but it's not the only thing I do. I also use mathematics in my job. So I think it's great that we're talking about increasing technical and scientific awareness in schools. I also would like to say that I highly value the arts and literature. But I think the efforts coming from some of these companies are not very sincere. Specifically, code.org, they're not really talking about the full breadth of what is required to bring up people from non-traditional backgrounds and to retain them also in the scientific and engineering workforce. They're not talking about that.
We're going to take a quick break. Can you stay on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about tech literacy and coding. There are a lot of efforts to try to reach underserved communities to get them involved in technology. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. Toll free 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.com.
Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. By the way, you know, there's a new way to support local public radio. It's My Broker Donates. They match home buyers and sellers with the most effective agents in the Bay Area and then secures part of the agent's fees for KALW. More details about this program at kalw.org/mybrokerdonates.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will rebroadcast a conversation we had about the underlying reasons for the rising cost of higher education. According to the College Board, average tuition at four-year public colleges has risen by more than 250% over the past 30 years, while family income has gone up only 16%. So how are families and students dealing with this, and what role should the federal government play to make college affordable? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about coding and technology literacy. Today, we are graduating proportionately fewer computer science majors than we did in the 1980s, and the number of students signing up for computer science has flatlined. But a number of organizations and schools are stepping in to fill this void, especially in underserved communities. We often hear about jobs of the future and that everybody needs to learn how to use a computer and possibly even code. Today's guests say that's really important, but this is also about more than jobs. So if you work in the field of technology, if you work with students, and you'd like to talk about the importance of this, we'd love to hear from you. Also, we're going to talk about how kids are actually using coding to really empower people with information. There was a great article about a young kid who taught himself to code, and it allows you to put your mouse over the name of a politician in a news article and find out how much money that politician is getting from corporations. So there's just a lot of really inventive things happening, and we'll talk about that also later in the show. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Annette V., assistant professor in the English Department at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches courses in literacy, composition, and technology. And Jim Ryan is STEM Executive Director of the San Francisco Unified School District, a brand new position. STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. And before the break, we were talking to Anonymous in Silicon Valley, and you wanted to talk a little bit about code.org, and I just brought up their website, and it says every student in every school should have the opportunity to learn computer science. They've got a lot of calls for teaching online, intros to computer science, partnering with them to bring computer science to your district. So what are your criticisms of code.org?
So companies like Facebook and Twitter and Google, in general, if you look at who they're hiring mostly people with master's and PhD credentials, often from top-tier schools like UC Berkeley or Harvard or something like that. They don't go out and they won't go to Santa Clara U or something like that and hire somebody with an undergraduate degree from Santa Clara U. Mm-hmm. So it's great to encourage kids to go into coding, but the fact is that a lot of these kids, they could spend a lot of time and energy going in and getting a degree, and maybe they can't afford to get themselves to a Harvard or UC Berkeley, maybe they didn't have the stellar grade point average that is required to get into some of those programs. It requires like a 4.0 to get into those programs. So, there's just a huge divide between who these companies are actually hiring and, you know, what the vast majority of these students are actually where they're at right now. If you look at where most students in San Francisco are at right now, their math scores are not going to get them to UC Berkeley or even UC Irvine. So I don't mean to sound like a technical snob or anything like that. I'm just laying it on the line. I personally love science and technology, but it breaks my heart to see these kids kind of not being told what it's really going to take to get them to those. And one other thing I would say is that right now, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, who is basically it's kind of the umbrella organization for a lot of Silicon Valley engineers, has estimated that we don't have a shortage of computer scientists. And in fact, computer science salaries have been stagnant for 20 years. So, you know, when a student who is maybe, you know, busted their butt in San Francisco, who's from a disadvantaged background, is choosing a discipline to go into, when they look at computer science and they see the stagnant wages that are not really going to allow them to live in the Bay Area, you can see why the number of people who are graduating in the U.S. has dropped, especially in face of the fact that there's a lot of people coming from other countries who don't have the exorbitant tuitions that students in the U.S. have to pay. Most European countries, China, India, Canada, it's about, you know, their yearly tuition is about $4,000 a year for exactly the same program that you would get coming out of a U.S. school. Mm-hmm. So the debt load, you can see these disadvantaged students are not going to go into computer science. They can't choose that as a discipline because it doesn't pay well enough as a career, and it's very unstable. One of the things you haven't mentioned, you've mentioned the fact that Latino and African Americans are severely underrepresented in Silicon Valley, but actually, you know, across the board, even amongst the traditional white male the population, they're all being laid off in their 40s, their 30s and 40s, and they have to find a new career. I mean, I've met people on Ocean Beach who used to be coders in Silicon Valley who are homeless now, living on Ocean Beach.
Huh. Wow. Well, you know, you brought up so many good points. Thank you for calling in. And I want to bring in another guest to respond to your points. Kimberly Bryant is the founder of Black Girls Code. That's an organization that works to provide young and preteen girls of color with opportunities to learn technology and computer programming skills. Hi, Kimberly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So were you able to hear our guest in Silicon Valley talk about the challenges that young people face? So what are your thoughts on this? Because you work with a lot of Black girls who are learning to code. What are your thoughts on what she said about the difficulties not only to get into college, but then to get some of these, you know, lucrative jobs?
Well, one of the things we focus on in our program is really outreaching to girls from underrepresented communities. So that is girls from African American communities, Latino communities, as well as Native American communities. Mm. And we try to give them a really broad overview of technology. So that that means it's not only focusing on creating coders or only focused on the computer programming aspect, but we also introduce them to robotics. We also introduce them to design. We really want them to see the many different pathways into the field of technology and not just the computer software engineer pathway. And also, our focus is really, as Annette mentioned a little bit earlier in the program, in giving them another skill, so to speak, to put in their toolkit. We know that many of our students may not actually go into the field of computer science, but some of them may go into the field of medicine. They may go into an art-based field. This is just one of the skills that they may use in their day-to-day and whatever career they decide. So our focus is really not in terms of preparing them for one of the high-paying jobs in Silicon Valley, but having the skill set if that is the path they choose, or to use a skill in another path. But the opportunities are out there. So when we see companies that are especially in the Valley that have job openings, more than 30 to 40% of their job openings that go unfilled, we're definitely, you know, on one of our focuses is preparing our students to be able to take advantage of some of those jobs that often start out at 70K and above. So being able to give them these skills will allow them to have more options and more opportunities in terms of when they're where they're going and how they go into their careers in the future.
Annette, how would you address the concerns raised by our caller from Silicon Valley?
Well, I guess I would say I think I'd agree with Kimberly on a lot of things. I mean, I think her program is wonderful. But I would say that the looking for computer science jobs is really a red herring. When we think about, you know, what Google and Facebook are hiring, I mean, Google and Facebook are, of course, giants, and they give a lot of money towards Code.org, and you know, they're kind of driving the discourse here. That's what people talk about. But there are tons of people who use the skills of computational literacy in their jobs and in everyday life. And I think that thinking that, you know, well, I'm going to learn how to program so that I can get a job at Google is kind of like saying I'm going to play basketball in order to get into the NBA, or I'm going to learn to write so that I can be a best-selling novelist. Sometimes that happens, and that's, you know, that's great for the people that that happens for. But at the same time, there's a vast, you know, the vast majority of people who learn to write and learn to play basketball are doing it for, you know, the kinds of things, the kinds of other benefits that it gives you, the kind of physical agility or mental agility that those things give you. And I think that that... that's very important, you know, what computer programming and what sort of computational literacy can help you think. And as Kimberly said, thinking about, you know, who might go into medicine, there's, you know, a great deal of innovative work going on right now in thinking about, you know, how we might, say, track people's individual health data differently through computational means in order to better treat them. And these are questions that you can really only answer if you know a lot about medicine and a lot about computational things. Mm-hmm. And so those, I think that that thinking strictly about computer science jobs and Google and Facebook is really, you know, as I said, just a red herring. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim, do you think, though, that that should be part of the goal here, to diversify some of these companies that are so influential on our lives? I mean, most of these corporations, LinkedIn, Facebook, Google, although Apple has not released its diversity numbers, like less than 2% are of people of color. And so it's mostly, you know, white men who are deciding how we're interacting with this technology. And I often wonder, once it does diversify, how will our experience change? But should that be one of the goals, to try to diversify some of these major corporations?
Our goal is to serve our community of San Francisco. And by better serving that community, or one way that we would better serve our community is by providing access to those companies for the students that we currently have. And currently, many of your guest mentioned, many of these companies currently rely on the H-1B visas, and that is simply because we as a school system are failing in preparing those our current population of students for those positions. And if we not that every student is going to go into these fields, but if we don't give them some kind of leg up so that they can compete with their peers across the world for these jobs as well as many others, then we're doing them a disservice. Currently, who has access to the, you know, there's a reason why the students, why there are so few Latino and African American students. And it's because, and one of the reasons are that those with that have the privileged position of being exposed to these technologies and finding success in math and sciences are primarily the white and Asian students in our schools. And so if we want to change that paradigm, we need to start addressing the needs of the math and science as well as the computational literacy of all of our students, and so that they have access. Doesn't mean that they will go into it, but at least that is an option to them. Currently, we are closing off those options because others have greater access to those subject matters.
And that is Jim Ryan. He is STEM Executive Director. STEM is Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics of the San Francisco Unified School District, a fairly new position. And Annette V is Assistant Professor in the English Department at the University of Pittsburgh, where she teaches courses in literacy, composition, and technology. And Kimberly Bryant is founder of Black Girls Code. Their vision is to increase the number of women of color in the digital space by empowering girls of color ages 7 to 17 to become innovators in STEM fields. And before we get back to calls, Kimberly, can you just tell us a little bit about some of the young girls you work with? I'm looking at some of their photos right now on your website. What interests them about coding and technology, and how do they plan to use this in the future?
I think one of the things that we find to be a common thread amongst our students in any of the many cities that we are in the U.S. as well as in Johannesburg is that they have a thirst and a hunger to be creative and to be creative using technology as a lever. So for some girls, that means their passion and their focus is gaming. That was one of the things that most interested my daughter in terms of her wanting to really get into coding and technology. For some girls, that interest is a little bit more distant from the pure skill of coding, and that's, you know, they want to start a business. They may want to start a business in fashion. They may want to start a business in their community, but they see technology as a tool or a skill that they would need to get their idea out. So be creating a web page, and that's an avenue for them to be able to get the word out about their business. So in our classes, some of the build the web page in a day classes, the build a game in a day classes, the mobile application classes, and even the more extensive workshops that we've been doing this summer with the hackathons that really bring together a group of girls over 2 days to create a business from the idea stage to the coding stage to the marketing stage and then pitching it to a panel of judges. That really has allowed them to flourish and bring these ideas around problems that they mostly see in their community and things that are interest to them to life, and really creating a concept for a product on paper and then creating it by using these technology skills and putting together that entrepreneurial focus and really creating a final product that solves a problem. And we see that time and time again with the girls that are coming through our program.
And because you work with young Black girl coders, and I understand there's a Black Boys Code coming soon. Now that middle schools across the country are starting to teach computer literacy, how do you think it should be taught in a way that engages all students, specifically communities of color and underserved communities?
That's a great question. I think one of the things we find in our program and what makes it unique is that we have a very strong cultural competency that's built into the program. And so some of that comes from the standpoint of just having girls engaging with other girls that look like them, as well as mentors and instructors that they can relate to from a cultural standpoint. But that's also creating lesson plans that really have a cultural element to it. So that may evidence itself in terms of building a product or building an application that solves a problem in your community, or focusing on the interest that we have from the students that are participating in the programs. I think in many programs that I see and that have been out there to date, they don't have this strong cultural focus, and they don't have training for the teachers that really have focus on cultural competency. And that's one of the issues we find in reaching these underrepresented communities that's lacking. So getting that cultural focus into more of these programs would be something that I would see being very beneficial in terms of attracting this community. Another organization that does that very well is the organization we've been affiliated with lately called Yes We Code. And they just did a Yes We Code hackathon in New Orleans during the Essence Festival. And a lot of the elements that were built into that hackathon over 2 days were strongly cultural focused in the way they were given to the participants. Even having a rites of passage ceremony as the culminating event at the end, which is really highly something that is very focused on the culture of an African American and Latino communities. Hmm. So putting those elements into the basic technical skill set of learning to code and build a product, I think is what makes the difference in really attracting and retaining more diverse communities in the field.
And that's Kimberly Bryant, founder of Black Girls Code. Let's take a few callers in a row, and then we will get responses from our guests. Let's hear from Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, thank you. I was wondering if your experts there can recommend books or websites where one can teach oneself in coding that's user-friendly. Books or websites.
Okay, thank you. We'll get to that in just a minute. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Charisse in San Jose. Hi, Charisse.
Hello.
Hi.
This is David.
Oh.
Alice Verdes.
Oh, sorry about that. Hi, David.
I had an initial point to make that basically most of our culture discourages being able to think rationally. Advertisement, religion, a lot of other things just are against that. And coding, regardless of whether you end up coding for a living or not, teaches you how to think methodically and to analyze situations. And I think people need that. The other thing that occurred to me is that especially people in straitened circumstances, the kind of mastery you can get when learning to code, just making pretty pictures and controlling a little universe, can be very good for people. And I think it's the kind of non-BS-ish self-esteem boost that a lot of people could use.
Huh, that's great. Well, thank you for calling. Let's go next to Charisse in San Jose. Hi, Charisse.
Hi, good morning. As a teacher, I'm trying to actually implement more STEAM instead of STEM, A being art.
Oh.
And yeah, and so one thing that I did this past year was my kids, there's a website provided by MIT called Scratch. And Scratch allows kids to basically program. The script is already kind of put out there for them, and they learn how to put the pieces together like a puzzle and create different games, tutorials, and it's a great introduction for kids from middle school below to kind of just introduce them to what coding is without it being so text-based and programming-based.
Great, and so it sounds like a lot of kids are gravitating towards this because of the way that it's being taught.
Yes, yes, and it's very kid friendly. Mm. Tons of examples, and with each example that you look at, you can even look at the code. And the way that the code is done is color coded, and like I said, it's like puzzle pieces. Mm. So they get to really play with the ideas. So it's a great introduction before they get into, you know, sitting at a screen, typing in code.
Great. Well, thank you for calling in. Jim, you're taking some notes here. What are your thoughts on just what we've heard from our last caller, Charisse, and also Kimberly, about how to make this engaging for a wide range of students?
Charisse mentioned STEAM in one of the components of our work as we start to build out the team is how do you integrate art in a meaningful way, in such a way that the art actually supports the learning of the other subjects like science and math and technology, and rather than overwhelms it. And so we are just embarking upon this work about. In a couple examples is as a teacher of science is teaching their kids how to notebook. How do they also teach them about as they sketch what they see in the natural world around them on their science walks? How do they learn about light and shadow so that they appropriately sketch what's in front of them? As a geometry teacher is teaching three dimensional perspectives. How do you teach a vanishing point? And those kind of art integration into these pieces. And we also mentioned a designer using. Using coding for user interface and wireframing up a user experience. Those type of artistic embedding that is an opportunity lost if we don't take advantage of it as we teach the typical STEM subjects. So I'm very encouraged by that. One of the things that and Alex mentioned, you know, recommending a book or a website, and Scratch is a good one because it's very drag and drop friendly.
In Scratch, I-N Scratch?
No. Oh. Scratch is what Charisse mentioned, MIT program. And that's very drag and drop. So you get to learn the logic of how do you put together a program. And then you can build upon it. But one of the things that we should be careful of as people look for online ways of learning is there's a strong distinction between explaining a subject and teaching a subject. Mm-hmm. And many of the sites that you'll go to or that are simply a video of what's going on is somebody explaining what the topic is rather than actually teaching it. And because when you're teaching it, you actually have to have the participant, the learner, engaged in the work rather than simply watching somebody else do the work.
And just quickly, Annette, do you have any suggestions for Alex for books or websites to teach yourself to code?
Well, I would say, I mean, Scratch is a wonderful program. It's really built for, you know, younger kids. So it depends on what Alex's goal is. And really, you know, whether he's interested in, I mean, I would say, like, working on JavaScript tutorials is great if you're interested in general web stuff. And code.org does have a kind of clearinghouse of a number of things that, you know, a number of places where you can kind of go to, here, try this out for a little bit. I think that it's most important to figure out, you know, rather than saying, I want to learn how to write, why do you want to learn how to code? Is it just to learn a little bit more, to get a job in this field? You know, what's the language that they use in that field? And then Google that language and, you know, tutorials and things like that. But I think Jim is right that a lot of the materials that are available online explain things but don't necessarily teach them, which is, you know, I think a kind of gap and why that's important to have, you know, emphasis on this in formalized schooling.
And we have about a minute left. Kimberly, how will more diversity in technology, whether people go into jobs or just create apps, how will that change what's being created? And I mentioned this really great app by this self-taught 16-year-old coder who allows you to put your mouse over a politician's name on a news article to find out where they're getting their money. It's called Greenhouse. A really great new plugin. But how do you think more diversity will change what how we're interacting with technology and how we use things?
I think in a very fundamental way, it's important that technology products are created by the demographic of folks that are utilizing them. So if we look at usage from a consumer basis, we see a high number of women as well as a high diversity of people of color that are consumers of technology but not really able to have a seat at the table on the creation side. But I think the benefit for companies broadening up the pool of talent is the diversity of ideas and perspectives that you bring to the table. So that's one of the greatest rewards in making sure that as many voices can have a voice and a seat at the table in technology as possible.
Kimberly Bryant is founder of Black Girls Code. Jim Ryan is STEM Executive Director of the San Francisco Unified School District. And Annette V is Assistant Professor in the English Department at the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How are students paying for college? On the next Your Call, we'll rebroadcast a conversation about the underlying reasons for the rising cost of higher education. According to the College Board, over the past 30 years, average tuition at four-year public colleges has risen by more than 250%, while family income has gone up only 16%. So how are families and students paying for college, and what role should the federal government play to make it affordable? That's on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.